Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today
is going down right here.
We're back. Hour number two of Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for hanging out with us this morning. Happy July. Happy July 4th week. So, Kev, why don't you weigh in on that? Do you think July 4th weekend is this weekend or next weekend, or you think it's dealer's choice?
It's definitely not next weekend. I don't think you can do it when it's past. I don't know. That doesn't work.
Or is there no July 4th weekend?
Not this year. I mean, I would if I went to a barbecue yesterday, so I would say it would be this weekend. If I had to pick, no cop-outs, yeah. It's this weekend.
One of my friends considers himself a July 4th expert and authority, and he celebrates it with fervor. He lines his street with flags and games, and he threw his barbecue, I think, yesterday. So he feels like it's this weekend. It's like he wouldn't have a Christmas party after Christmas. You have them before Christmas. That's sort of his thought process. I would say Wednesday is the worst day for July 4th to be. So, I'm trying to take a couple of days off around it, you know, but days off for us at this time of year, still reading constantly about NFL and NBA stuff. But in any event, I hope y'all are trying to get some downtime during this week. I will try to myself. So, I heard I was listening to your show yesterday. George Kurtz filling in for me and Kevin and George going at it. I'm not going to pile on the Jameis stuff. We covered it last week. I thought you spent a lot of time on it. But the reality is he's out for three games. We all know that now. People in the media have had strong reactions. My fellow alum Damian Woody on ESPN had a very strong reaction about Jameis and thought the Bucs should just move on at this point. But, you know, there are a lot of reactions throughout the media. Safe to say that Jameis is in a bad spot, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is starting those first three games. So a lot of different things that we can attack. What I'm going to do is go to our Roto Experts Exclusive Edge package, which you can find available on rotoexperts.com right now, and pick out one of the articles, a sampling of what you might see. And this one's written by Brandon Murchison. He is one of our staff writers. You can find him on Twitter at Roto Superstar. And this type of stuff is what will be in there. I'm going to be adding an offensive line rankings article. George Kurtz has done his rankings. I know you talked a little bit about some of the stuff that he was speculating on yesterday. By the way, you guys did a lot of NHL yesterday, which you and I don't normally do because we're not NHL experts. But George is the NHL expert for Roto Experts, one of the best follows on Twitter at George Kurtz for hockey information, especially related to fantasy. So this article by Brandon Merchant is, which newcomer is most likely to lead you to fantasy football glory? Basically, who is this year's fantasy football version of Kareem Hunt? Led the league in rushing last year. So I'll preview it. He said, each year the NFL draft, the discussion begins as to who will be the fantasy breakout star. It was Odell Beckham in 2014, David Johnson in 2015, Jordan Howard in 2016, and Kareem Hunt last year. I will say about a year ago, a lot of people were pointing to Kareem Hunt as being that sleeper, and it ended up working out because there was going to be available touches there, and he obviously had a huge he was being drafted around, third round. You know, he was a rushing title and top five at the position, so you can't really complain about that. But here's a couple of guys that he throws out there for this year. he's not really looking at any of the quarterbacks. I think we will continue to discuss it throughout the summer, but I think it's going to be a struggle for some of those quarterbacks to get on the field, notably Baker Mayfield. I could see Josh Rosen getting some time. Sam Bradford's down. Sam Darnold is the one who could really win the job, right? But that's not a guarantee as of right now. Josh Allen, thought to be a project. Lamar Jackson, they're talking about getting him on the field, but right now I think all signs point to Flacco being the starter for now. Anyway, Rashad Penny, Seattle Seahawks. He's starting off the list with one of the surprise picks in the NFL draft. Eyebrows were raised when he was selected, but he was the most elusive back in college in 2017, playing behind a subpar offensive line in Seattle, will put those skills to the test. His considerable skills as a pass catcher on display during the Senior Bowl, raising his profile as a player in PPR formats. He currently has him ranked as a high-end RB2, but don't be shocked to see him finish 2018 as a solid RB1. So volume could be there to give him that opportunity. What are your thoughts about Rashad Penny?
I think I'm out on Penny. I don't love what they've got going on over there in Seattle. I do think part of it, I remember I was harshly out on Penny, and I think part of that was feeling that he was overdrafted in the real draft. I mean, he's by no means a terrible running back, and there's a lot of people that felt like he might have been one of the three best running backs in this class. I necessarily was not one of them, but some of the people who felt that way did watch way more film than I did, so I take that for what it is. But this Seattle situation is not one that I'm in love with, and I actually tell you it's the truth. In some of the best, I started to grab Chris Carson in a way, because not that it would be shocking, but I am trying to be prepared for the fact that maybe Penny does not hold this job down. I'm not going to be buying the stock. I'd rather be a year late to the Penny party than a year early.
I think that's fair. You know, rookie running backs are the ones that can often make a really big impact. Historically, if you look at tight ends and wide receivers, they don't, on average, make a huge impact. Yes, you have Odell Beckham and you have some other examples. In fact, the year that Odell Beckham was a rookie, there was a great rookie class. And I think 7 of the top 50 wide receivers back in Odell's rookie season, which is 2014, as Brandon states in this article, were 7 of the rookies were in the top 50 in PPR leagues that year. That is a huge number compared to what rookie wide receivers normally do in the draft. The irony of that is that I was pounding the table at people that were drafting all those rookie wide receivers saying they would make an impact. I was saying, you're making a huge mistake. So I was way wrong that year. If I just said it the year before, the year after, I would have been fine. But I remember that year, it's the year I decided to shoot my mouth off about it. But I do mention it really every year. I think it's important to note that rookie wide receivers don't often make an impact, but the one position where they can is what we're talking about, and it's running back. And the one thing I would say is, while you can have some concerns, their offensive line, which has been atrocious for a couple of years, has been rebuilt a little bit. They have Dwayne Brown, who they traded for last year midseason, come from Houston. They have Ethan Posich, who was a second round draft pick last year. Justin Britt is second, and is their probably their most accomplished offensive lineman on this team in Justin Britt at center. He's a second-round draft pick from a few years ago. DJ Fluker, who has bounced around the league a little bit. They add him at guard, but he's a veteran. And then Jermaine Ifedi, who they've tried, who's a first-round draft pick from a couple of years ago, considered to be a project, and now is going to try his wares at right tackle. So I think the offensive line is better than it was a year and 2 years ago, which will give Penny an opportunity. Obviously, you have a playmaker at quarterback. Doug Baldwin's still there. They bring in Brandon Marshall as a veteran presence at wide receiver, and Tyler Lockett. Is it my favorite depth chart on the offensive side of the ball? Definitely not. But it comes down to one thing in fantasy football, and that's opportunity. And I think Penny may very well get enough opportunities for him to be valuable. We'll evaluate these other choices that Brandon has as well, but I think you have a chance there. I'm looking on Fantasy Pros right now to see where he's going in PPR leagues. Rashad Penny is currently 22. So as Brandon states, he's a low-end RB2 right now, but do you think he can outperform Darius Geis or Jay Ajayi Alex Collins, Derrick Henry. Those are the guys right in front of him. Kenyon Drake in front of him as well. That's possible. I see him moving up there. I think Brandon's got a point about him challenging as an RB1. It may not be my first choice, but I think that's an interesting call just because the opportunities will be there. And I think at the end of the day, that's really one of the most important things about fantasy options is how many opportunities he can get. And I don't necessarily see Chris Carson unseating him unless he plays badly out of the gate.
Where's Chris Carson ranked on those fantasy pros?
Good question. Checking it right now. Give me a minute.
Because while you look that up, I've seen
he's 50th, so basically mostly undraftable. When you're in a 12 team league, 50th running back. It's, you know, five running backs. Yeah, he's a late pick.
I understand. Listen, I'm not saying that if they're both on the board, you take Rashad Penny. That's not what I'm saying at all. But in terms of value, Chris Carson has been someone that has been getting a lot of praise coming out of the training camp thus far. Pete Carroll's been praising him. He's added some weight. He feels solid. I don't know. That feels like more so the play that I'm going to make in the Seattle backfield. Again, not that if the two are on the board, you take Penny. That's not the debate. It's more so if I look at the value, I'm going to play my hand to Chris Carson and see if I can strike gold with that over taking Rashad Penny.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson is another one of his calls. He thinks he's getting 12 to 15 touches on a weekly basis. He's currently behind LeGarrette Blount on the depth chart, but staff is really impressed with him. Obviously, he's a second-round pick. I hope they're impressed with him. He's coming off the board as the 37th RB right now, according to Fantasy Pros, making him a surefire sleeper. You can draft as your RB4. Johnson has the upside to return low-end RB2 value. I think it's a fair projection, but here's my problem. If he's the 37th RB off the board right now, I guarantee you in the next 6 weeks that's going to move up. And people are going to start drafting, getting high on it, and be like, LeGarrette Blount's not going to last the season. And, you know, Theo Riddick is only a pass catcher, and the opportunities are going to be there. Amir Abdullah is still on the team. This has been a running back by committee for a long time, this team. And I can throw out tons of names like Javid Best and others that were part of it and then not part of it and then found their way out, and nobody was particularly impressive or a big fantasy value. I still think, even though the offensive line has improved, I still think this is a committee, and Johnson would not be the guy that I would pick. I would think it would require multiple injuries and or just a huge impact when he's in there. Kareem Hunt, keep in mind, he made a huge impact when he was in there, but they gave him a lot of opportunities right out of the gate. I don't see that being the case for Kerryon Johnson. Here's a name that I want to throw out to you. The next one is Nyheim Hines. They see starting potential in him, and if Marlon Mack fails early as a starter, Hines could step right in and take the job. He may not excite you as much as some other guys, but he labels him as a poor man's Alvin Kamara, and he can make a similar impact. Don't expect those Kamara results, but you should start to see a rise in his ADP. He's coming off the board as the 50th RB, but he says no doubt he returns on that investment. Draft him there while you can. I think he's right. I think that will start to move in the positive direction. I've seen other guys like Mike Clay, who I was in a league with last year. He likes Jordan Wilkins, who is another running back that they drafted. And Hines was a fourth-round draft pick. Wilkins was a fifth-round draft pick. He thinks Wilkins is actually going to get the most carries by the end of the year. But I saw Hines play a few times this year. He did some work against my alma mater, Boston College, in a place where they got the win on the road. So your thoughts on Nyheim Hines?
I actually really, really like Nyheim Hines. I think that what they have currently in their backfield is uninspiring. So someone who can be as explosive as him, I think it's exciting. And that's what this Colts offense is going to need, whether they have luck or not. They're going to need playmakers and game breakers. And that's what Nyheim Hines is, and especially where you are getting him right now. And I think that the ADP will certainly climb up, but I wouldn't be too scared of it. I mean, they obviously could get a point where it gets dangerous, but that's when you have to follow along the news throughout training camp and see if they're willing to actually put him out there as the starter. I'm not in love with Marlon Mack. I know that you've mentioned a couple of times that perhaps Jordan Wilkins could be someone to keep an eye on. And keep an eye on him, of course, but Nyheim Hines feels like if I'm going to own anybody in the Colts backfield, it's going to be Nyheim Hines.
Yeah, it worries me that for that being a committee as well, but can you see a place where Hines takes over the starting job? I think it's possible. But they've got three guys that are all young players that they've drafted in the last couple of seasons, and I think you're going to look at I think you might be looking at a committee there. As much as I like him as a talent, I got people telling me about Wilkins. I own back as a keeper in another league, so I'm thinking about all this stuff as I projected. He wouldn't be the one on this list that I like the most. The other guys he's got on here, he's got a couple of wide receivers, Michael Gallup in Dallas, Anthony Miller in Chicago. I've expressed some concern in Chicago about the sheer number of players they added during one offseason, but can Anthony Miller be the type? He's currently the 66th wide receiver off the board, according to Fantasy Pros, but can you see somebody like Anthony Miller making an impact? He'd have to displace somebody like Taylor Gabriel or Kevin White, with Allen Robinson obviously being the huge free agency acquisition. You need a few guys to take a step forward. They got a solid running back in duo in Howard and Cohen, Trubisky in year number two. Trey Burton added, Allen Robinson added, and Anthony Miller added. Can Anthony Miller be the guy to come out of this?
I mean, he could certainly give you a lot of value, right, especially where the ADP is at. I think this does come down to what you're expecting for the Bears this offseason. I wonder, it's actually really difficult because I've kind of gone back and forth on this. Are we expecting this big leap because of what we saw out of the Rams last year? Or are we...
Yes, are we projecting.
But are we also nervous because we're like, okay, well now we're being almost in a way lazy. Like what the Rams did was not typical. And people are like, oh, now, you know, because this is kind of, and not to say that this article is lazy. This is what we do every year. He mentioned this every year. People come out and there are new rookies that hit. But Kareem Hunt, it's more of a, it's the name. I'm just curious if people are worried that, oh, the Rams are once in a blue moon. Like maybe the Bears can do it. So I think that's kind of the dynamic you have to follow.
Yeah, we'll come back. We'll talk about Michael Gallup. I'll discuss the Bears thing a little bit further. We'll talk about Michael Gallup from the Dallas Cowboys and the Cowboys outlook when we come back. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh, FST, back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Sean Engel is talking my language today. A little Bismarcky. Love it. We're talking NBA this morning. We're in football mode right now. Get back to the NBA a little bit later. Maybe talk some World Cup. Live match on right now. Spain against Russia. Spain up 1-0. So crowd obviously going nuts. It'd be big for Russia to get to the quarters. And we saw some good matches yesterday. Really fascinating match, the France-Argentina match with 7 goals scored. And then the Portugal-Uruguay match. So Cristiano Ronaldo, Leo Messi have I think the stat was they've never scored in the
knockout stage
round of 16 combined. They've got 0 goals. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo had 4 goals in the group stage, so I can't criticize him for that, but... Yeah, it was a tough one yesterday. They go down 2-1, I believe. And as a friend of mine was texting me this morning, there was a foul late on Uruguay, and the ref didn't call it. Cristiano Ronaldo got a yellow card for dissent, and it was the only card of the match. That was an injury time. I believe it's the only card that he put up. So Uruguay known for a, let's just say, aggressive style of play. Many people have called them dirty over the years. I've watched them play that way. And that favors them. If the ref's going to swallow the whistle, that's just going to favor Uruguay almost every time. They play very aggressively. Luis Suarez is known to literally bite people on the pitch. So it's, you know, something like that's going to favor them. So let me just do this quick read, and we'll get back to football. We'll talk World Cup at the top of the hour as we transition back into that and then the NBA. So if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. So go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So hope you guys are listening to us, hitting us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio, at Mike Blue, at Kevin Walsh. So,
Mike, do you know what today is?
Today is July 1st, the start of NBA free agency. It is also something else.
Bobby Bonilla Day.
It is Bobby Bonilla Day. I forgot. I usually try to text my Mets fan friends about that.
I got an update on my phone. I got notifications for when Adam Schefter tweets. And Adam Schefter with a happy Bobby Bonilla Day. Bonilla collects $1.193 million from the Mets today, as he will each July 1st through 2035. He has not played baseball since 2001.
What is the number exactly?
1.19 million.
Attaboy. Just cashing that check. I would ask for a printed check. I would not even want it to, I would not want it to go direct deposit. I would ask for a printed check to be mailed to me so I could walk into the bank by, like, you know, on July 5th. just cash it. I would want to go through the, just with a big smile on my face, I would just want to go through that deferred payment each and every as a rite of tradition. Or maybe you just throw a big part. Maybe you do get the direct deposit and you just, you know, just throw a big party. Celebrate July 1st each day. In fact, I'm screenshotting Adam Schefter's text as we talk, and I'm texting my friends right now. So thank you for reminding me of that.
Can you help me understand how that happened quickly? Not to get lost in the, I don't understand.
That's not the only guy that had that deal set up. Ken Griffey's got that, and Chris Davis from the Orioles. We talked about it.
Why Bobby Bonilla? Like, was he meant to be any type of? I only know Bobby Bonilla as the guy that the Mets are paying for not playing. Like, that's only the way I know Bobby Bonilla.
He was a superstar player. He's from this area, New York area. He had success with the Pirates, and when the Mets signed him, he was a huge free agent. And in order to be able to afford him long-term, they did this deferred payment, and it went horribly wrong. He, in fact, said, "You're going to have to try and knock the smile off my face." He said it to the New York reporters when he arrived here. He was really happy to be here, and it went really badly. And they took every opportunity to just knock that smile off his face. They really did. Even though he didn't play like the player that they wanted him to be. So, yeah, I can tell you I was around, you know, I was baseball. I mean, I'm still a huge baseball fan, but I remember it being a big deal that they got him because he's local. And in fact, I'm trying to look up his numbers right now so you get a sense of what happened when he got here. Let me see his transactions. I want to see the exact thing. This isn't good radio for me to do this, but I'm trying to add some color to the conversation. Transactions. There you go. December 2nd, 1991, he signed as a free agent with the New York Mets. And from there, he only was on the Mets until July 28th, 1995. So he did, spent the 91, 92, 93, 94 seasons. They traded him at the deadline to the Baltimore Orioles for Damon Buford and Alex Ochoa, who was supposed to be a big prospect, and he didn't work out either. So from there, he went to the Marlins. He was traded by the Marlins to the Dodgers. Then he was traded back to the Mets and then released by the Mets, and he signed his with the Braves. I mean, it was the last 6 years of his career. He just went all over the place. And the Mets deal that he signed, I mean, it looks silly to talk about it now because the deals are so much smaller. But, yeah, he got paid by the Mets $6 million, $6 million, $6 million, $5 million, and then all that deferment money that you're talking about. So there was quite a bit. Quite a bit from him. And his performance with the Mets was in 1992 in his first season. He hit 249.
That's 2 years before he hit 249. He, in 1990, second in MVP voting, was able to hit 280 while putting in 120 RBIs with 32 home runs. The next year, he finishes third in MVP voting, hits 302 with 100 RBI season again. First year as a Met.
Yeah.
249, 70 RBIs. So this Mets stuff has been going on literally forever. Of just people coming over, they get excited about, and then it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, he made a couple of All-Star teams with the Mets too. To
literally
be fair.
A couple.
I mean, he wasn't. Yeah, out of 4 seasons, he made 2 of the All-Star games on that. But you know, the Mets weren't going anywhere, and he went from hitting. Making 4 consecutive All-Star teams and hitting 100 RBIs 3 times. You know, he went 19 for 70, 34 for 87, 20 for 67, and 28 for 99 in a combined season in 1995, where he did hit 329. So in 1995, he had a good season. That's why he commanded some decent return from the Orioles, who Alex Ochoa was a very big prospect at the time. So, anyway, happy Bobby Bonilla Day. I know we got off track there, but worth mentioning. Always worth mentioning it's Bobby Bonilla Day. So where was I? We were talking about Anthony Miller, right? And
yes.
The Bears.
Lovely Chicago and, Bears.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you on this, and I've probably been more outspoken about it, but I get concerned about all of these things happening at once. And then, yeah, he's the 68th receiver going off the board right now. So you don't have to spend anything to get him. In some of your leagues, especially if you're in a 10-team league, you don't even have to draft him. You can just pick him up after the fact, or maybe you can wait. But if you want a little draft and stash, he could be a guy. You know, that's the important part about him in this. You're not really spending anything in order to get him. He could be your last draft pick. Take your kicker and defense with 14 and 15 and Anthony Miller with 16 in some of these leagues. So who's the other guy? Gallup is who we're going to talk about. There's a lot of options there, frankly, for Trubisky. Let's just say Trubisky is good. Mm. They're going to run the ball a whole bunch with Jordan Howard. They have Tariq Cohen as a really unique option. They have Allen Robinson, who they spent a lot of money on. Not to mention Trey Burton, who they signed. Deion Simpson's second tight end, but really they're going to see if they can extract some of Trey Burton's talent out of him and make him a legitimate threat. And then they signed Taylor Gabriel in the offseason, and they have Kevin White, who they don't owe him anything anymore, so he doesn't have to be on the field. He's, I think, in the last year of his rookie deal, Kevin White is. So it's just always a lot to try to have to sift through for a player. You know, he, of all the players I mentioned, right now, he would be the 6th offensive option, maybe 7th. Let's just say he has a good training camp and he's 5th. You think that team's going to put up enough numbers where Anthony Miller makes a big impact? I don't see it.
I mean,
he's going to have a standard kind of rookie year. He might have a big game here or there, but consistently for a 10-game stretch, I don't see that happening.
Let me even pass the Anthony Miller point. Let me see if I can clean up what I was trying to say as we were coming up against the break, right? Brandon writes this article, who's going to be the next Kareem Hunt? But you strip that down to who's going to be the surprise breakout rookie. And that article is always worth doing because it always happens, right? What the Rams did last year is not typical. We don't come into every season and say, because if you strip down who's going to be the Rams, it's Who is going to be the team that goes from terrible offensively and all of a sudden now through offseason acquisitions of exciting players, growth from their second-year quarterback, and an exciting new first-time head coach breaks into a top-five offense? That is not something that we've seen. That's not typical. It's not usual. And I understand that the Bears did make a lot of moves. And I understand that people are excited about what their offense could be. I get all of that. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. But it is difficult to think that the Bears are going to put all of this together. I mean, when you look at that division, Bears are still probably the worst team in the division. They're better. They're better. I like their offensive line. I do think that their running game could be good. I expect Trubisky to improve, but the Rams last year were one of the five best teams in football with one of the three best offenses in the entire league. That's a big jump. That's a very, very big jump.
Yeah, the Rams scored the most points in the league last year. More than the Patriots, more than the Eagles. So
they had the best offense. Yeah, I was keeping it safe. I wasn't sure if they ended up with the top offense.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say they're the best offense. They did score the most points, but you know, your point still makes plenty of sense. The Bears were 29th in points scored last year. Let's see where they were yardage wise. The Bears were 30th. So yeah, they would have to make big improvements. The Rams made massive improvements. I think the year before they might have been close to last in scoring. So the Rams made huge strides there. Of the teams that were miserable offensively last year, I'm just going by yardage right now. Or let me do points scored. I'd rather do that. So there's obviously always a number of different statistics that you can use in order to illustrate a point. The Browns were dead last in points scored, 234. Giants, 246. Colts, 30th with 263. Bears, 1 point in front of them. Miami, Denver, Cincinnati, Arizona, the Jets, Oakland, Buffalo. That's your top, your bottom 10 teams in points scored. Which of those do you like to break out, be something different? Could the Bengals, did they fix enough? And are they going to be healthier that Joe Mixon could become something? Maybe. You like Miami with Adam Gase running the show now to turn things around, Tannehill coming back? I don't. The Bears making all those moves, I think that's why people are excited about it, because they made so many of those moves. But really? The Indianapolis Colts were 263. They were 30th in the league in points scored. They get Andrew Luck back. It's pretty interesting to me.
I mean, that's probably the
one of the teams I'm looking at. What's that?
Of what you've listed thus far, that would be the one, because I still think highly of Andrew Luck. I mean, Jordan and I were talking about this yesterday. One of the problems with this is the threshold that we're needing Andrew Luck to clear. He throws a football, and it is breaking news. That is a really, really low bar to be breaking news for a quarterback.
Yep. And the Browns were dead last, and they're another team that made a lot of moves. I like their moves that they made. I think Tyrod Taylor and Jarvis Landry and that crew can get some stuff.
Why don't
done?
The Browns get that Bears hype? Their offense has been upgraded more. Also, because Hugh Jackson is terrible, right? That's probably another part of it.
Yeah.
Immediately answered my own
question.
Think
about it. Who they added? They added Tyrod Taylor and Josh Gordon and Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry has the most receptions in NFL history through four seasons. Miami traded him. Nice job. So, and they got Carlos Hyde and Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson. You like all those pieces. Some of these guys have already proven themselves. I actually think Carlos Hyde is an underrated running back. I don't even know if he's going to keep that job. Duke Johnson, I think he's shown his skill set. It doesn't mean he's going to be an all-pro, but it means that he can run a little, he can catch a lot. And Nick Chubb, right now he's listed second on their depth chart, but I think it's kind of semantics. But Nick Chubb is actually a guy that if Hyde falters, Nick Chubb could even win that starting job. I got him in my dynasty league, and I'm kind of happy about it, because a year out, I don't think they're going to have to worry about Carlos Hyde and the free agency money that they gave him if Nick Chubb is good enough. So the last guy in his article, we should just talk about it before we hit the break, is Michael Gallup from Dallas. That depth chart obviously is sans Dez Bryant for the first time in many years. But you got Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott back playing a full season, provided he stays healthy. And that wide receiver depth chart is rough. It's Deontay Thompson, Terrence Williams, and Tavon Austin. So the thought process that Michael Gallup gets a shot to break into that. Cole Beasley's there too, as well as Allen Hurns. So that is a very muddled and not top heavy receiving core. But I would sit here and tell you that Zeke Elliott's going to touch the ball so many times that being one of that so six guys wouldn't be the guy that I would pick. I think of the guys that Brandon has laid out here, it's got to be one of the running backs. And for me, it would be Penny versus Johnson and even Hines, although Hines at its value is extremely interesting to me. So if I'm ranking them, it's Penny first, Hines second. I'm not breaking news there. I'm just saying even relative to their ADP, I might even take a shot of Penny over Hines. But Hines would be interesting to me. So there you go. That's Brandon Murchison. You can find him on Twitter at Roto Superstar. We're going to have some of these guys on next weekend to talk about some of their articles and their thoughts on some of these players, whether it's Brandon or Chris Mitchell or many of the other guys that have committed to the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. So please go to rotoexperts.com and check in on that package. Lots of great content there. We'll come back, talk a little bit more football, maybe some World Cup. Mike and Kevin on FST back right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Update on the World Cup. Russia just scored on a penalty kick. Yellow card given to Gerard Piqué. That was in the 42nd minute that penalty kick was scored. Ball in the box. Piqué deflected it off his arm. He was given a yellow card and a automatic penalty kick, which was drilled home. And we're tied at one as we head towards halftime. Probably a few minutes left, a couple of minutes of extra time because there was a video review and a lot of delays, a lot of bitching and moaning, frankly, on the part of Spain that he didn't handball it when it was pretty clear to me. Anyway, so good stuff there in the exclusive Edge package. Please go to rotoexperts.com and check it out. I'm looking at some other stuff right now, but which I may get to a couple of players to ask Kevin about, but the Scott Fishbowl. I know it's a league that we talk about a lot, and people are like, why do these guys talk about this so much? Because it's a cool situation. There's a lot of industry people involved, as well as fans. So we get to play together, and I think everybody has a lot of fun with it. It's no money on the line, but there's a charitable. Go to fantasycares.net in order to donate, please. Scott Fish, who organized this, does a really good job spreading the love across many cities. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. I'll try to repost the interview with him maybe later today, certainly sometime this week, so you get a sense of what it is this league is all about and what it can do for people. But you can go to scottfishbowl.com to learn more about it. But I got my division this week, and it is stacked. It is so stacked. It's hilarious. Last year, we had a good division. I was in there with Mike Clay from ESPN and a couple other guys. TJ Kazin, I believe, from Dynasty Factory. He ended up winning our division. He had a sick year. I think he had Todd Gurley, which helps a lot. But I'm in the Jack Donaghy division. So the funny part about the Scott Fishbowl, too, he comes up with a theme every year. Last year, it was, I think, animated characters or Disney or something like that. And I was in like the princesses division, so the Elsa division from Frozen. Anyway, this year it's TV shows. I'm in the 2000s conference, and my TV show conference is how am I forgetting the name of the show? Liz Lemon and Jack Donaghy and Perry Cox. What was the name of that show, Kev?
Not a clue.
Come on. With Tina Fey, the name of the show. You got to be kidding me.
You don't know it.
Why? How am I forgetting this? No, I can't remember it.
You're lashing out at me.
I can't remember it. Yeah, but I'm blanking. You got to know this. Sean Engel might know it. Sean, if you know the name of the show, 30 Rock. 30 Rock. Jeez. So that's the name of it. And that's I'm in the Jack Donaghy division, which is played by Alec Baldwin, which is a hilarious character. And I'm in it with our very own Mike Leone from Daily Roto. You can find him on Twitter at Two Hats, One Mike. It's me. It is who else? Oh, NFL.com's Adam Rank, who is kind of funny on Twitter because he goes back and forth with people on it. They talk a lot of smack to him, and he gets back at people, which I always find hilarious. From Yahoo, Mike Salfino also writes for the New York Times. He and I go back and forth on Twitter a lot talking about this kind of stuff. So inside the pylons, Jeff Ferrer. Anyway, the draft starts, slow draft starts next week. It's a week from today. I think it said July 8th. It could be July 9th. So we shall see how that all goes. Last year, my draft was painfully slow. It took nearly, I think it took like over 3 weeks. But some of these people were done in a few days. 22 roster spots, and it is a half point for PPR, half point for first down. That's for running backs and wide receivers. For tight ends, it's a full point PPR, a full point first down. So always added value to the tight end. My strategy last year paid off in that I waited on the tight ends. I went with some mid-range guys, Kobe Fleener, who unfortunately is still suffering from concussion symptoms, so I hope that subsides for him. But I went with guys like that. I didn't go up for Gronk or Kelce or any of that kind of stuff. So anyway, little fun there at Scott Fishbowl. Did you get your Scott Fishbowl assignment yet?
I just figured it out. I'm in the Kenny Powers division, which is awesome. I've always found Kenny Powers hysterical. So yeah, I'm in it. I don't really recognize any of the names in it. But yeah, Kenny Powers division trophy coming to me soon. Very excited about it. It should be good stuff. I want to ask you more about this Browns-Bears thing because now I can't stop thinking about it. We don't have to if there's more important stuff on the agenda.
Go for it.
Well, I'd
rather. No, I'm just going to. I was going to throw out some players after this, but that's fine. Ask me.
Well, because right now, I mean, because you, I mean, you've really been on him, I think, more than anyone that at least I spoke to. It's just, why are we doing with the Bears? Why are we doing with the Bears? And now I'd like to just add the other question to the mix of, why then isn't this really happening with the Browns? Not to say that people aren't saying the Browns are going to be better. They are. But I think most people would say Tyrod Taylor is a better quarterback than Mitch Trubisky. I think the wide receiver core is pretty comfortably in the advantage of the Cleveland Browns. I think their offensive line, I mean, you can tell me better than anybody, but I think it would probably favor Cleveland. If not, I mean, the margin would have to be very close.
Yeah, they addressed it last year and this year in free agency. They got J.C. Treader as their center, Kevin Zeitler, who they paid big money to as a guard last year, and Chris Hubbard from Pittsburgh. Sean Coleman, who was a third-round draft pick a couple of years ago, he's slotted in at left tackle right now, though they drafted Austin Corbett in the second round this year. And then Joel Bitonio is thought to be a pretty solid guard there at left guard. The Bears, I might as well compare the two. The Bears, Kyle Long comes back. Bobby Massey was an unrestricted free agent from Arizona last year, year before maybe. Cody Whitehair is still in at center. Charles Leno Jr., seventh round pick from a couple of years ago. They drafted James Daniels in the second round this year, though, so I would imagine he'll be challenging Brad Soule at left guard. So comparable edge to the Browns, though.
So then edge to the Browns. And then the running back group, close, I would say. I mean, Duke Johnson, Tariq Cohen, I think most people will probably say Duke Johnson. I think
I like the Brown. I do like the Browns depth chart at running back. Carlos Hyde, Nick Chubb, Duke Johnson. None of them are as good as Jordan Howard.
Okay.
And Jordan Howard is well complemented by Tariq Cohen. I actually like both of those running back groups. I think the Bears will rely more heavily on the running game than maybe the Browns can, because we've talked, you know, we were just talking about it, Josh Gordon and Jarvis Landry. Those guys could be, you have an excellent possession receiver, one of the best in the league in Landry, Gordon can take the top off the defense. It remains to be seen. I've seen Antonio Callaway was drafted by the Browns in the fourth round. People like him as a long-term project. And then Corey Coleman, obviously, first-round draft pick from a couple of years ago. I've seen rumors where Coleman might be on the move, but that remains to be seen. But I think the Tyrod Taylor can play a really good ball possession type of passing game with this running game, whereas the Bears, as Trubisky develops, can still lean pretty heavily on their run game with Jordan Howard, who's obviously proven to be a workhorse back. So, that's why the Allen Robinson thing was really interesting to me, because Matt Nagy, who is people really like as an offensive mind, I think people are excited about what he can do. I think that's where the hype comes from, because Nagy did so many interesting things with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and obviously last year with Kareem Hunt. I think that's what people get excited about. Could it be a repeat of last year in Kansas City, which Alex Smith really had a breakout season statistically last year? And I think people are hoping that Trubisky can be a repeat of Alex Smith last season.
So I'm going through right now. There was an ESPN Insider article that was put up ranking the best and the worst rosters from 1 to 32. It was done in partnership with Pro Football Focus. The Browns are the 32 of 32. They feel like they're the worst roster in football.
Still?
That's where it is. This is an article very recently posted on the 27th of June. Where do you think the Bears would rank?
That's a good one. Let me take a quick look again. Oh man, they made some interesting moves, but I would still say they're not in the top 20. Where do they have them?
They are at 22, which is ahead of the Giants, the Broncos, the Raiders. So some notable teams, the Bucks, they're ahead of. Some notable teams, the Texans, that they are ahead of.
The Texans, really?
The Texans are actually on this ranking are at 31.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
And
I got some real questions about Denver. Like, Denver's just starting to worry me. I think Von Miller overshadows some of the weaknesses on other parts of the defense. But, and I say that despite two Boston College players being in their defensive backfield, one of whom is awesome. But, so that's surprising to me that they have Houston so low. I'm taking a look right now. Is there a write-up on it at all? What does it say about Houston?
So it says that biggest strength, and it even says, a full disclaimer, a healthy J.J. Watt is the Texans' biggest strength. Considering the injuries the past two seasons, it'll be difficult to judge what Watt could be capable of. Their next best option is DeAndre Hopkins. And then it says their biggest weakness, if they do want to take the next step with Watson, protecting him needs to be addressed. Their offensive line is one of the worst in football. I'm sure you can confirm or deny that for us. They said most unfortunate for him is left tackle Chris Clark, who's coming off one of the worst seasons in all of football, but graded by their system. So I think really what it comes down to, and then they kind of have their Pro Football Focus grades here. The defense, it's a lot of average and some good, but offensively, the offensive line, so red being really bad, they've got four of the five guys with red. The only guy who doesn't is Martinez Rankins, and that's because he is a rookie who they selected in the third round. So that's really you can touch to that more.
Yeah, Nick Martin is a second-round draft pick from 2016. He's a second-round draft pick from 2016, and he has some injuries as well. So I think he's still a young player. That is developing. But, yeah, unrestricted free agent, Chantrell Henderson, Senio Kelemete from New Orleans, Zach Fulton from KC. I mean, they pieced it together with just a bunch of guys. So, yes, they are not going to rank highly on my list either. But I guess that plays into it. You look at skill positions with Lamar Miller, Deontay Foreman, pretty good. Tight ends, not so good. Ryan Griffin, Steven Anderson, both with a concussion history. But people get enamored with the Deshaun Watson, Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins thing. They think he might be able to air it out, which is all well and good. But how well is Deshaun Watson going to be protected? It's why I've had some concerns about how highly he's ranking on some of these QB lists.
So there are, I mean, we can kind of go through this. There are a couple of surprises that I've seen within this article, just kind of, you know, perusing through.
Give me a top 10 pick that surprised you.
Well, I'll tell you right now. Unless you've now pulled up the article, I think some people would be pretty surprised who they believe the number two overall roster is. The Eagles are their number one overall roster. If you haven't seen it, would you have a guess as to who would be number two?
Number two roster. Steelers?
No. The Steelers are they're up there. They're in the top 10, but they are not number two. Number two, the Steelers are seventh. The Atlanta Falcons ended up coming in at number two for them. They said their biggest strength is probably going to be Matt Ryan getting back closer to his MVP campaign. He did suffer from some really, really bad luck that they said in 2017. He threw an NFL leading eight, categorize as unlucky interceptions, which are tipped or receiver errors. So they believe that Matt Ryan is really going to have a big bounce back year. And they feel like that coupled with what is a roster better than what performed last year, they've got the Atlanta Falcons at two.
That is not a shock to me at all. I guess the Steelers, but so I take the L on that one, but that is not a shock to me. People like their offensive line. Austin Hooper is still a young tight end. They have a great running back too. I would say the best 1-2 punch in the league in Freeman and Coleman. Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley. That's a great number 1, 2, and 3. And like you said, it's a former MVP at quarterback. As far as their defense is concerned, it's been built a certain way with a ton of speed. But guys like Desmond Trufant and Keanu Neal and Vic Beasley, Brooks Reed, even on the outside, Tack McKinley, a first round pick from last year. It's an extremely fast defense, an opportunistic defense. It's why I think I favored them last year in a lot of rankings, looking at them to force a lot of turnovers, but it is the type of team that could do that as well. I'm not suggesting they're as good as the Vikings or even Philadelphia, but that doesn't surprise me at all. I would imagine they have the Vikings up pretty high on this list as well.
Yeah, the Vikings are high as well. They are at five. One of the other teams that I think that could, again, I mean, depending who you are, the Dallas Cowboys come in at eight on this list. And I think the Cowboys are a team that not many are expecting to really be competing for the playoffs. Maybe they are. I don't think that as of today I am, but they have them as the eighth best roster.
Surprising to me. Yeah, we just talked about how sort of muddled their wide receiver core is, but you know, they continue to address offensive line. Granted, they didn't play up to par last year, but they played without Zeke Elliott for a period of time. So you're talking about one of the top running backs, one of the top offensive lines, especially as far as Pro Football Focus grades are concerned. Defense has always been an issue, but they do have pass rushers like DeMarcus Lawrence, and they just added Leighton Vander Esch. Sean Lee is a veteran who hopefully he can stay healthy. It does sound high to me, but when you look up and down the offensive line, quarterback, running back, those are all extremely high grades. So a little surprising, but when it comes to stuff like Pro Football Focus, I think you can see why, because those offensive linemen are all grayed out very high. And maybe they're doing it in a cumulative grade, you know, just adding up the points. I don't know exactly how they're doing that, but interesting stuff. Maybe we dive into that a little bit more next week. I'm going to turn back to the NBA in hour number three. See if we have any additional updates. We'll do a World Cup segment as well, so we can see where we're at in that tournament. It's Mike and Kevin headed towards hour number three on Fantasy Sports Today. Come back and join us.